Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on RFID technology when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. The federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. That's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. 15 files on you. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, all of this information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for? Knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, then call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website and send us an email. Go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email machine and then send us an email request. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Radio frequency identification. It's an automatic identification method relying on storing and remotely retrieving data using devices called RFID tags. In actual fact, it's called a transponder. An RFID tag is an object that can be attached to or incorporated into a product, into an animal, or into a person for the purpose of identification using radio waves. Chip-based RFID tags contain silicon chips and antennas. Passive tags require no internal power source, whereas active tags require a power source. In looking at the history of these RFID tags, in 1946, Leon Theremin invented an espionage tool for the Soviet government which transmitted incident radio waves with audio information. Sound waves vibrated a diaphragm which slightly altered the shape of the resonator, which modulated the reflected radio frequency. Now, even though this device was a passive covert listening device, not an identification tag, it has been attributed as the first known device and a predecessor to RFID technology. Now, the technology used in RFID has been around since the early 1920s, according to one source, although the same source states that RFID systems have been around just since the late 1960s. A more similar technology, the IFF transponder, was invented by the British in 1939. And it was used by the Allies in World War II to identify airplanes as friend or foe. Another early work explored RFID is the landmark 1948 paper by Harry Stockman, which was entitled Communication by Means of Reflected Power. Stockman predicted that considerable research and development work has to be done before the remaining basic problems in reflected power communication are solved and before the field of useful applications is explored. Mario Cardullo claims that his U.S. patent was the first true ancestor of modern RFID technology. A passive radio transponder with memory, the first demonstration of today's reflected power, called backscatter, RFID tags, was done at the Los Alamos Scientific Laboratory in 1973. Now, there are different types of RFID tags. RFID cards are also known as proximity or proxy cards. And they come in three general varieties. They're either passive, semi-passive, also known as semi-active, or they are active. So the passive tag has no internal power supply. The minute electrical current induced in the antenna by the incoming radio frequency signal provides just enough power for the CMO's integrated circuit in the tag to power up and then transmit a response. Most passive tags signal by backscattering the carrier signal from the reader. What that means is that the aerial, the antenna, has to be designed to both collect power from the incoming signal and also to transmit the outbound backscatter signal. The response of a passive RFID tag is not just an ID number. The tag chip can contain non-volatile EEPROM for storing data. Lack of an onboard power supply means that the device can be very small. Commercially available products exist that can be embedded under the skin. As of 2006, the smallest such devices measured 0.15 millimeters by 0.15 millimeter and are thinner than a sheet of paper, which is 7.5 micrometers. Now, the lowest cost for these RFID tags, which are standard, chosen by Walmart, DoD, Target, Tesco, in the UK, and Metro AG in Germany, are available today at a price of 5 cents per chip. The addition of the antenna creates a tag that varies from the size of a postage stamp to the size of a postcard. Passive tags have practical read distances ranging from about 4 inches up to about 15 feet. In some cases, they can be read up to 30 feet, depending upon the chosen radio frequency and the antenna design and size. Due to their simplicity in design, they're also suitable for manufacture with a printing process for the antennas. Passive RFID tags do not require batteries and can be much smaller and have an unlimited lifespan. Non-silicon tags made from polymer semiconductors are currently being developed by several companies globally. simple laboratory-printed polymer tags operating at 13.56 megahertz were demonstrated in 2005 by both PolyIC, Germany, and Philips in the Netherlands. If successfully commercialized, polymer tags will be roll-printable like a magazine and much less expensive than silicon-based tags. The end game for most item-level tagging over the next few decades may be that RFID tags will be wholly printed the same way the barcode is printed today, and to be virtually free, like a barcode. However, substantial technical and economic hurdles must be surmounted to accomplish such an end. Hundreds of billions of dollars have been invested over the last three decades in silicon processing, resulting in a per-feature cost which is actually less than that of conventional printing. The active tag, unlike passive RFID tags, they have their own internal power source which is used to power any ICs that generate the outgoing signal. Active tags are typically much more reliable. They have fewer errors than passive tags due to the ability for active tags to conduct a session with a reader. Active tags, due to their onboard power supply, also transmit at higher power levels than passive tags, allowing them to be more effective in RF-challenged environments like water, including humans and cattle, which are mostly water, metal, such as shipping containers and vehicles, or at longer distances, such as yards or miles. And many active tags have practical ranges of hundreds of meters and a battery life for up to 10 years. Some of these active RFID tags include sensors such as temperature, logging, which have been used to or in concrete maturity monitoring or to monitor the temperature of perishable goods. Other sensors that have been married with active RFID include humidity, shock, vibration, light, radiation, temperature, and atmospherics like ethylene. Active RFID tags typically have much longer range, approximately 300 feet, and larger memories than passive tags, as well as the ability to store additional information sent by the transceiver. Now, the United States Department of Defense has successfully used active tags to reduce logistics costs and to improve supply chain visibility for more than 15 years. At present, the smallest active tags are about the size of a coin, and they sell for a few dollars. Now, the RFID system works like this. An RFID system may consist of several components, such as tags, tag readers, edge servers, middleware, and application software. Now, the purpose of an RFID system is to enable information to be transmitted by a mobile or mobile device called a tag, which is read by an RFID reader and then processed according to the needs of a particular application. The data transmitted by the tag may provide identification or location information or specifics about the product tag, such as price, color, date of purchase, the use of RFID in tracking and access applications first appeared in 1932 to identify aircraft as friendly or unfriendly, to identify friend or foe. It's called the IFF. Now, RFID quickly gained attention because of its ability to track moving objects as the technology is refined. More pervasive and possibly invasive uses for RFID tags are in the works. In a typical RFID system, individual objects are equipped with a small, inexpensive tag. The tag contains a transponder with a digital memory chip that is given a unique electronic product code. The interrogator, an antenna packaged with a transceiver and decoder, emits a signal activating the RFID tag so that it can read and write data to it. So when an RFID tag passes through the electromagnetic zone, it detects the reader's activation signal. The reader decodes the data encoded in the tag's integrated circuit, called a silicon chip, and the data is passed to the host computer. The application software on most processes on the host processes the data and may perform various filtering operations to reduce the numerous, often redundant reads of the same tag to a smaller and more useful data set. Take the example of books in a library. Security gates can detect whether or not a book has been properly checked out of the library. When users return items, the security bit is reset, and the item recorded in the integrated library system is automatically updated. In some RFID solutions, a return receipt can be generated. It's at this point that materials can be roughly sorted into bins by the return equipment. Inventory wands provide a finer detail of sorting, and this tool can be used to put books into shelf-ready order. Now, what do we see in current usage? Well, passports. An RFID tag is embedded in new UK and United States passports. The United States produced 10 million passports in 2005, and it has been estimated that 13 million will be produced in 2006. The chips will store the same information that is printed within the passport, and it will also include a digital picture of the owner. The passports will incorporate a thin metal lining to prevent unauthorized readers from skimming information when the passport is closed. Let me pause here for a second and make a couple of observations. You know, we talk a lot about freedom and privacy. There's nothing in our Constitution, however, that guarantees us any right to privacy. The Fourth Amendment's the closest thing that you could get. It doesn't guarantee you privacy. It guarantees you a search warrant to come after your person, houses, papers, and effects upon probable cause to believe that you violated some law. So it requires at least probable cause, a little higher standard than reasonable suspicion, to go to a judge to get a search warrant issued. That's a protection. It's a civil rights protection built into our Constitution, but it doesn't guarantee that you're going to be kept private. To illustrate that point, our Supreme Court rules more often on the Fourth Amendment than any other section of the Constitution in every session that they conduct. So often, in fact, that a special publication is put out called the Search and Seizure Law Report every month, reporting on search and seizure cases. Never does a month go by or a search and seizure decision come out of the Supreme Court that somebody doesn't write me a letter and then cite the newspaper article that they read, which tells them that the Supreme Court has struck another fatal blow at the Fourth Amendment's protections. The truth of the matter is, the Fourth Amendment has not been breached. Going back to 1886 in a case called Boyd versus United States and following the search and seizure cases forward to 2006, what we see are certain standards set down by the Supreme Court which have been altered based upon certain changes or differences that may occur in technologies. For instance, when the police come up and they go to knock on your door, and it's called the knock first and then enter rule. The police found that oftentimes when they would knock on the door, knock, 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 police, open the door. Well, you know, it takes a minute or two for somebody to get up, walk over to the door, open it up, and then the police come in, execute the search warrant, and start looking for drugs. People in the know would have the drugs sitting next to the toilet, and as soon as the police would knock, 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 police, we have a warrant, the first thing they'd do is run into the toilet, drop the stuff in, flush the toilet, and the evidence is gone. So we had to come up with a solution for that. And so the solution is no knock. We'll just break your door down, and then when we get in there, we'll tell you to sit on the couch and shut up, and then we'll go look at the toilet. So every time that the criminals come up with a defense, the police come up with a new offense. And every time the police come up with a new offense, the criminal comes up with a new defense. So it's an ongoing game that's been going on for at least 200 years in this country. And I imagine it's been going on for thousands of years in different forms and different societies and different ages. And then I see it as a game. And so I look at these RFID tags and I say, okay, well, here comes a new technology like fingerprinting. And do I want to give my fingerprints to just every Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes along, or to every government or government agency or government agent that wants to take my fingerprints? My fingerprints are a part of my property. They're protected by the Fourth Amendment. And in almost every case, when the police take your fingerprints, they take your fingerprints with your consent. In fact, these RFID tags are all done by or with your consent. These alleged invasions of your privacy are actually not invasions of your privacy. They're done with your consent. Now, in some cases, you may not be consenting, and in some cases, you may not have any real knowledge, but in most cases, most. Now, if there's an RFID tag in your Gillette safety razor and you didn't know that, well, now you do because I just told you. But maybe in the past you didn't know that, and you took that Gillette safety razor home, you put it up in your medicine cabinet, and so now there you are with an RFID tag that identifies you as a Gillette razor user. Let's suppose that Congress comes along and enacts a law that says, thou shalt not buy any other razor than Gillette. And you, being an iconoclast, you go out and you buy a Schick. And so the razor police, ever vigilant for criminal activities and criminal behavior in American citizens, have this RFID reader, and they say, oh my God, there's a Schick razor in that guy's bathroom. They go to the judge, they get a search warrant, they come out, and they're looking for the Schick razor in your medicine cabinet. Now you're sitting there saying, well, that's preposterous. Why is it preposterous? 30 years ago, if you would have said that the government will enact legislation and they will force you to buy insurance, buy a commercial product from a commercial company against your will and over your objection, you'd have said, well, that's preposterous. Government would never force us to buy insurance. And lo and behold, the legislatures in every state but one or two compelled you to buy auto insurance. Children, if your government can force you to buy auto insurance, they can force you to buy carpet, drapes, television sets, or tennis shoes, if they so desire. The fact that they haven't done it yet simply shows how much freedom and liberty you have in America. But it doesn't mean that they can't do it. In 1933, President Roosevelt banned gold. They just came along one day and said, turn in all of your gold coins, and you can't own gold unless you record it with the government. Now, if government can tell you what you can and cannot use, such as marijuana, cocaine, gold, or compel you to buy insurance, or to get a social security card, or to get a driver's license, or, you know, we could go on and on and on, but, you know, government has a lot of power. And just because they're not doing it today doesn't mean they won't do it at some time in the future. And so, every time there is an offense, there is a defense. Somebody invented a tank, and then the other side came along and invented a bazooka to knock the tank out. Then the other side comes up with a stronger tank that the bazooka won't knock out, and so the other side comes up with an artillery piece that'll knock it out, or they come up with a warthog airplane that'll knock it out, or. You know, there's no such thing as a perfect weapon, and there's no such thing as a perfect defense. And so you're always in a state of flux. RFID is just another challenge to our privacy, in the same way that that telephone eavesdropping is a threat to our privacy. Now, I've said before, you can have privacy now in the computer age. You just have to work a little harder than you did in the past to maintain it. I'm not complaining about the police. I'm not complaining about George Bush and the National Defense Agency or anybody else. I've got a telephone, and I know that the telephone is bugged, and I know that those records are being scrutinized. So in order for me to keep my conversations with other people private, I know that I can't do that over the telephone, so I don't talk on the telephone. I don't say anything on the telephone that I wouldn't tell to George Bush live and direct in the Oval Office. See how simple that is? Same thing is true with flying on airplanes. You know, the time was when you could get on an airplane and you could fly from here to there, and you could do so in relative anonymity and privacy. Today you can't do that, and so you got to make a choice. Do you want to give up your freedom and your privacy for the convenience of riding on the airplane? Or do you want to maintain your privacy and tell them to take the airplane and stick it where there's no daylight? I prefer the latter. He who has the gold makes the rules. Now, in America, most people care nothing about privacy. Nothing. Zero. Privacy is so far down the list that it doesn't even come up on the radar screen. We do not need the Fourth Amendment in the United States of America. The Fourth Amendment is for people who practice the Ten Commandments, not for people who practice the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Communists don't have anything to hide. So they're not concerned about the Fourth Amendment, and they're not concerned about privacy. Now, there are some people who do have something to hide. They're hiding their privacy. I had a guy ask me that one time. He said, what is it that you're hiding? And I said, if I told you what it is that I'm hiding, then it wouldn't be hidden. Therefore, it wouldn't be private. So the fact that I am hiding something shows you that whatever it is that I'm hiding is private, and I'm hiding my privacy. I don't want you to know. If I wanted you to know, I'd tell you. Now, there are some things I don't want the government to know, and I don't want you to know, and I don't want anybody else to know, so I'm not telling. I had a girl tell me that one time. She said, I'll never tell. I thought that was cute. I'll never tell. All right, well, then let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Now, the RFID system consists of several components. Remember, it's got tags and tag readers, edge servers, edge servers, middleware, and application software. All right? Then, at some point in time, boys and girls, we have to have one of these tag readers so that we can read the tags on the goods that we bring out of the store. That is assuming, of course, that you don't want anybody else to know what it is you're buying. Let me give you an illustration. There's a store here called Sam's here in the United States. It's a division of Walmart. It's called Sam's Club. To buy at Sam's Club, you have to have a membership card. Now, Sam's is a pretty neat place to shop because they have things in bulk. Instead of buying pinto beans in 5 or 10 pound packages, which is fine for people that live in big cities and live in a condominium, but for those of us that live out here on the farm, you know, where you're 87 miles from the grocery store, we kind of like to buy pinto beans in 100-pound sacks so that we have some on hand. And then, you know, if you've got a school and you may have 10, 15 students, you know, and you need to feed 10 or 15 students for a week or two during classes and so on, we have to have a big kitchen, and we have to have a lot of pinto beans. You know, it requires that we buy things in bulk. Well, Sam's is kind of handy because they sell them in 50-pound bags, and they sell in bulk, and then they sell at a pretty good price, pretty good discount, because you're buying in bulk. So, but here's the kicker: there's no privacy at Sam's. So there's no privacy there. So if I go in there, you know, everybody in this country uses a credit card. They take cash. They still take cash at Sam's. The day will come though when they won't. But at this moment in time, they're still taking cash. But you got to have this picture ID. So, you know, we had this little problem, and so my wife went over to a lady, and she said, "Hey, would you like to have a Sam's membership?" And this lady said, "Well, of course I would. It's $35." So my wife paid the $35 for this lady. Now, the lady is about the same shape, height, and form, and weight, and so on, as my wife. And so this lady went in, got the card, and so now she's got a second card. My wife has this lady's card, and she uses this lady's card. Now, here's the importance to this privacy thing. Let's suppose that my wife goes in and she buys 10 packages of toilet paper, Charmin toilet paper, and brings it home, puts it up on the shelf. Well, now, the Sam's people down here have a record of that purchase. They've got the date and the time of day and the amount of the purchase and all about it, see? Which makes all the sense in the world for this company, and I don't blame them for keeping those kind of records. After all, it's their records, and they want to keep them. That's fine. Let's suppose, though, that we have rationing, and the government comes in and says, "Thou shalt not have more than 2 rolls of toilet paper on thy shelf." And we've got 10 or 15 rolls on our shelf. Well, with satellite technology, they can shoot a beam down, and they can see that we've got this RFID tag in our toilet paper. And furthermore, they would see that we made this purchase on thus and such a date. And so I want to protect my privacy with my toilet paper. I don't want you people to know how many rolls of toilet paper I have. So I've got this lady over here, and she buys the toilet paper, and then I bring the toilet paper in, and I take the package apart so that I'm down to the individual rolls. Then I take the individual rolls, and I put those, and I surround those with metal. See, I've got metal. I've got them in a metal container so that the RFID reader can't shoot down through the metal and read the RFID tag, which is on the toilet paper, even if it's in the rolls of toilet paper. See? And then I take the packaging over here, and I take that out into my incinerator, and I burn that up. And I'm thinking that the heat will destroy the RFID tag. Or in any event, the RFID tag is out there in the incinerator, and therefore it isn't connected with a useful roll of toilet paper, which might be against the law, because Congress can enact laws that say, "Thou shalt not hoard thy toilet paper. Thou shalt not have more than 2 rolls of toilet paper on thy shelf." Congress can do all kinds of crazy things. They have in the past, they do today, and they're going to do even crazier things in the future, which has absolutely nothing to do with the health, safety, and welfare of the public. It has everything to do with the power and profitability of government and corporate America. I mean, that's the bottom line. Hang on a second. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about RFID, radio frequency identification. It's a new challenge. It's a new technology, and it's going to be used in conjunction with Revelation 13, verses 16 through 18. Just make up your mind to it, and then let's act accordingly. Now, a lot of times people say, well, if you're obeying all the laws, then you don't have anything to hide. But you know, back in 1939, there were some people in Germany that had something to hide. And the German government came along and said, well, we're going to outlaw Jewry in this country. And so all these Jewish people over here, they have to cease to exist because of this new law. And well, I'll bet you a lot of those Jewish people wanted to break that law by living. And the same thing is going to happen in the United States of America. Hasn't happened yet, and it's in the offing, and one of these days we'll have that same kind of legislation here. And having an RFID tag in your right hand that says, I am a Jew, could be detrimental to your health at some future point in time, as it was at that point in time. You know, having 6 rolls of toilet paper in your bathroom cabinet might be against the law at some point in time. And it might be to your advantage if you'd like to have a higher standard of living with toilet paper to wipe on instead of corn cobs, and you want 6 rolls instead of the government's mandated 2, then it might be incumbent upon you to protect your privacy. And that's why we teach privacy here at the law school. I've pointed that out a couple of times here as it relates now to the subject matter at hand. Keep in mind that we teach a school called our business school, in which we cover the subject matter of privacy in greater detail and show you what these 63 sources of information are. And if you know that this source of information over here is utilized by government or insurance agencies or somebody else to gather this information about you, you can then look at that and say, gee, I don't think I'll give them that information. When you fill out an insurance form, that information goes into a computer. Do you think that the FBI cannot get that information out of that computer that's being held by the John Hancock Insurance Company? You know, once you know where these pieces of information are going, you might want to ease up on giving out this kind of information. People are very, very commonly asking you for your name, address, and phone number. And, you know, sometimes you need to give them a name, address, and a phone number. But there are other times when you may not want to do that. Furthermore, you might want to give them a name, address, and phone number of somebody else or of something else, kind of like shopping at Sam's. You know, I don't mind shopping at Sam's. I think it's a pretty neat place to shop. I kind of like it there. But I really don't want somebody keeping a computer record on how many pinto beans I buy, or how many rolls of toilet paper I buy, or how many bottles of wine I buy. You know, I happened to be in there the other day, and I saw some neat buys on Cabernet Sauvignon wine, and so I bought a few bottles. But I really don't want everybody out there in the world to know. It's not that it's some big secret, you know. But here again, you know, privacy just says to me that whether I have 6 bottles of wine on my shelf or 60 bottles of wine or 600 bottles of wine is nobody's business but mine. And I don't think I want everybody to know that. So I try to be very circumspect in what I do in certain areas. Some things is very public. You know, I have a website, and I share with the world certain information, and I'm telling you about RFID systems here today, and I want you to know about that RFID system, and I want to broadcast it to the world. And then there's certain other things in life, and I'm sure that you probably have a few things in life that you just assume that nobody else knew anything about. So in our business school, we'll teach you how to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. Now, you take a look at this John Poindexter, who's coming up with this real neat system over here to spy on Americans. You can rest assured that these very same people that create this spy technology are working the other side of the fence to make sure that you don't know about them, but they want to know about you. Now, common people, you know, cattle, they don't have any privacy. My cows don't have any privacy. I have some privacy. My cows don't know, you know, everything about me, but I try to know as much as I can about my cows. And same thing is true about government. They want to know everything they can about you, but they don't want you to know very much, if anything, about them. Now, the purpose of an RFID system is to enable data to be transmitted by a mobile device called a tag, which is read by an RFID reader and then processed according to the needs of a particular application. The data transmitted by the tag may provide identification or location information or specifics about the product tag, such as price, color, date of purchase, and so on. Well, in a typical RFID system, individual objects are equipped with a small, inexpensive tag. They're getting the price now down. Their target is about 5 cents each. And they'll just pass that nickel cost on to you. So you're going to be buying your own tag so that you can give this information out to somebody else over here that you know not who or what he's going to use it for. And then we went through the example of the books in the library, and heck, it makes all the sense in the world for the library to tag its books. I don't deny that. An RFID tag is embedded in the UK and US passports, and now they've produced 10 million of these passports. The New York City subway is conducting a trial during 2006 utilizing PayPass by MasterCard as fare payment. The Moscow Metro, the world's busiest, was the first system in Europe to introduce RFID smart cards in 1998. And in the UK, the operating systems for prepaying for unlimited public transport have been devised, making the use of RFID technology. The design is embedded in a credit card-like pass that, when scanned, reveals details of whether the pass is valid and for how long the pass will remain valid. The first company to implement this is the NCT Company of Nottingham City, where the general public affectionately refer to them as beep cards. It has since then been implemented with great success in London, where Oyster cards allow for pay-as-you-go travel as well as passes valid for various lengths of time and in various areas. In Hong Kong, mass transit is paid for almost exclusively through the use of an RFID technology called the Octopus Card. Originally, it was launched in September of 1997, exclusively for transit fare collection, but it has now grown to be similar to a cash card and can be used in vending machines, fast food restaurants, and supermarkets. The card itself can be recharged with cash at add-value machines or over-the-counter in shops and can be successfully read several centimeters from the reader. Navigo passes for the Paris Public Transport System, RATP, is also an RFID technology. These RFID tags are used for the electronic toll collection at toll booths with Georgia's Cruise Card, California's Fast Track, Illinois' iPass, Oklahoma's Pike Pass, and so on. The TransPerth Public Transport Network in Perth, Western Australia, uses RFID technology. A number of ski resorts, particularly in the French Alps, have adopted RFID tags to provide skiers hands-free access to ski lifts. And then the Canadian Cattle Identification Agency began using RFID tags as a replacement for brocade tags. The tags are required to identify a bovine's herd of origin, and this is used for traceback when a packing plant condemns a carcass. Currently, CCIA tags are used in Wisconsin and by U.S. farmers on a voluntary basis. The USDA is currently developing its own program. Now, it's called a mandatory program, and I kind of take exception with that. See, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion over here that I go out and I tag all of my cattle, and then the satellite passes over, and then somebody comes along and says, hey, that guy Gordon down there, he's got 19 cows, or 1,900 cows, or 19,000 cows, and I really don't want anybody else to know that. And most of the farmers and ranchers that I know aren't too keen on the idea of everybody out there knowing what we've got or how many of them. So, that being the case, as time progresses along in a commercial sphere, you know, when you're selling cattle commercially, I'm sure you're going to have this commercial identification. So you have to make a decision as to whether you want to stay in commerce or get out. For me, I got out of commerce years ago, so I think I'll be pretty much in the clear. I don't sell my cows to the sale barn, I don't sell my cows to in the commercial sphere, so therefore it's irrelevant to me. But if you're a commercial guy, you know, let's suppose that you're running a trucking company and you're running up and down the tollway from Tulsa to Oklahoma City, maybe the Pike Pass is just exactly what you need. And maybe you need a smart card to go skiing up in the Alps. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily bad. But you want to understand that when you're using that pass, that the transit company is going to know how many times you rode the transit system. They're going to know that you ride the transit system from this station to that station 5 times a week. And then when you change and you go from that station to some other station, they're liable to be knocking on your door and saying, well, you must be a terrorist because you've changed your pattern of behavior. We have that going on here now in the States. We're starting to hear some pretty wild stories. For instance, the banks now are watching for people, you know, that make unusual or out-of-the-ordinary banking transactions. So, you know, you've got your normal, run-of-the-mill, everyday garden variety banking transactions, and then one day you come in and you double up on your payments, or you come in and you pay off your credit card. And that flags this checking system, and all of a sudden, you've got some police officer knocking on your door wanting this information because, hey, wait a minute, you paid off your credit card. That's abnormal. Who in the hell's business is it whether you pay off your credit card or not? And, you know, from the cop's point of view, he says, well, we're just looking for terrorists. Well, okay, but then it impacts upon my privacy. So that's why I don't have credit cards. And one of these days, you just get used to this, you know, looking at Revelation 13:16, one of these days we're going to go from from a cash society where we're using this fiat currency to where everybody's going to have these cards. Watch this. It'd be a very, very simple transaction. Once the system is set up and you've got your tag in your hand over here, you're working for the Microsoft company. And so the Microsoft company, at the end of the week, they simply direct deposit your compensation, let's say it's $1,000, into your checking account. You don't write checks anymore because there won't be any more paper transactions. So you go down to the supermarket and you get your basket of stuff and you walk up to the checkout counter, run the stuff over the thingy, and then just run your hand over the scanner and it automatically deducts it from your account. Won't that be real convenient? That'll also be real privacy intrusive because now there will be a record of everything that you buy. So you can't buy 6 rolls of toilet paper because the toilet paper police and the toilet paper law limits you to 2 rolls a week. You know, it's to keep you environmentally sound so that you're not chopping down too many trees over here, and two rolls of toilet paper a week is more than enough, or at least the toilet paper police are going to determine for you what's enough. And that's my objection. See, freedom entails you buying as much toilet paper or wasting or using as much or being as careful with it as you want to be. Same thing with buying Captain Crunch Cocoa Puffs, you know. I wouldn't buy them. I wouldn't buy Oreo cookies, but then, you know, if you want to buy Oreo cookies and plug up your arteries with trans fat, why should I come along and get in the way of your happiness and success? And if you want to waste trees and waste natural resources and use up more than your 2 rolls of toilet paper a week, well then, why should I get in the way of your happiness and success? Let me see if I can't conserve and make up the difference. But that's what freedom is all about. Now, you can have as much freedom as you want. You can have about as much privacy as you want. But you're going to have to work at it if you want it. And most people will not give up the convenience for the privacy or for their freedom or for their liberties. And that's fine by me. If those people want to give up their liberties and their freedoms, you know, let them get after it. And then those of us that want to protect them, let's get after that. Now, microwave RFID tags are used in long-range access control for vehicles. Long-range access control. Since the 1990s, RFIDs are used in car keys as theft protection. Without correct RFID, the car will not start. You know, you walk out to the parking lot and you push your button, your door opens. In January of 2003, Michelin began testing RFID transponders embedded into tires. After a testing period that is expected to last 18 months, the manufacturer will offer RFID-enabled tires to car makers. Their primary purpose is tire tracking in compliance with the United States Transportation Recall Enhancement Accountability and Documentation Act. It's called the TRED Act. Hey, isn't that neat? It's the Transportation Recall Enhancement Accountability and Documentation Act. Starting with the 2004 model year, a Smart Key Smart Start option became available to the Toyota Prius. Since then, Toyota has been introducing the feature on various models around the world under both the Toyota and Lexus brands, including the Toyota Avalon 2005 model year, Toyota Camry 2007 model year, and the Lexus GS 2006 model year. The key uses an active RFID circuit which allows the car to acknowledge the key's presence within approximately 3 feet of the sensor. The driver can open the doors and start the car while the key remains in a purse or a pocket. Well, isn't that just special? Other sensors, such as seismic sensors, may be read using RFID transceivers, greatly simplifying remote data collection. Some smart cards embedded with RFID chips are used as electronic cash, such as Smart Trip in Washington, D.C., EasyCard in Taiwan, Sushia in Japan, T-Money in South Korea, Octopus Card in Hong Kong, Oyster Card in London, Underground in the United Kingdom to pay fares in mass transit systems and or retail stores. And the Chicago Transit Authority recently began using RFID technology in their Chicago card. In August of 2004, the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction, here's your prison system, approved a $415,000 contract to evaluate the personal tracking technology of Elanco Technologies. Inmates will wear wristwatch-sized transmitters that can detect if prisoners have been trying to remove them, and then send an alert to prison computers. This project is not the first such rollout of tracking chips in U.S. prisons. Facilities in Michigan, California, and Illinois already employ this technology. Okay, so get ready, boys and girls. Revelation 13:16. Let's cover that one again. It's kind of an interesting short topic here. It says, and he causes, this is your government, causes all, both small and great, rich and poor. It doesn't make any difference whether you're a Bill Gates or you're a bag lady under a bridge. And you're going to have this chip embedded in your right hand. But nobody's going to knock you to the ground, knock you unconscious and stick it in your hand. You're going to walk down. And you're going to beg, you're going to ask for, you are going to fill out papers, you are going to request it, you're going to line up to get it because of the benefits that are associated with it. It's called the mark of the beast. You've already got it in your social security card that you carry in your wallet. But you're going to put it in your right hand, and you're going to put it in your forehead, and you're going to pay to have it done. You're going to go to your doctor and have him implant these chips so that you can participate in the trade, commerce, business, and industry. He's going to require you to receive a mark in your right hand or in your forehead, because no man may buy or sell save he that has the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. You're going to have the mark of the beast. You're going to have the number in commerce, or you're not going to participate in commerce. All of you commercial cattle ranchers out there are going to identify your cattle with these RFID tags, or you're not going to sell those cattle into the sale barn. That's what the bottom line to that is. Now, there is an alternative to all of this, which we're coming up to. There's an alternative called the Ten Commandments in place of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. It's a choice that we have to make. And we're all going to make that choice. Time's coming. Most people have made their choice, and then they want Social Security, and they want the mark. They want commerce, and they want to participate in commerce, and that's why they have checking accounts and social security numbers, and then they have credit cards. But then there are some of us out here that are starting to have second thoughts about, well, maybe we ought to rethink this. And so if you're one of those that are thinking about rethinking it, we'll take this up next time, talking about rethinking on RFID technology next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, which is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and good night, friends.